Roll call for Monday, January 30th. Agar.
Present.
Anderson.
Here.
Anselmi Dalton.
Here.
Baldwin.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Boner.
Here.
Bouchard.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Ellis.
Here.
Emmerich. 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 Hastert. Hicks. Kinski. Landon. Meyer. Moniz. Nethercott. Pappas. Perkins. Peterson. Rothfuss. Scott. Von Fladern. Wasserberger.
Excused.
President Bebout.
Here.
29 present, 1 excused.
The prayer this morning will be by Senator Christensen. Please rise.
Dear Father in heaven, we come before thee this morning to give thanks for this opportunity to work for the people of Wyoming, to serve, to come together, to be a unified body with our intents, with our intentions and goals and ideas to leave Wyoming better than we found it. We thank thee, Father, for the great people who we serve with, this staff, these folks that join together to bring their messages from their communities to help us understand their issues. We pray for thy wisdom as we wrestle with these tough issues, whether it's budgets or individual bills, that we'll be able to sort through them, to feel thy love and inspiration, and we'll be able to do the right thing, and then share that message with those we represent. We thank thee for this time. We pray for thy help. We say this in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Reading correction, approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January 27, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Bouchard, Chairman.
Any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. We will have no doctor for the day, nor nurse for the day, but we have our own two senators that are standing by and ready. Today in Wyoming history, in 2016, Kenny Sailors. Kenny Sailors, what an incredible guy. The inventor of basketball jump shot while a student at the University of Wyoming, died at the age of 95. Sailors had a spectacular college basketball career and went on to play professional basketball. Sailors was an outfitter in Alaska for many years before returning to Wyoming in retirement. He was living in Laramie at the time of his death. Incredible person. Today is day 15 of the proposed 37-day session. Mr. Vice President.
President, could I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Behind us is my good friend Sean and Sonia Dorr, and their son Josh, all native Gilletteites. And if you attend tonight's Wyoming Restaurant and Lodging Association reception, Josh Dorr will be the and his band will be the entertainment tonight. So would the Senate please welcome the Dorrs to the great Senate.
Welcome to the Senate. Senator Hastert.
I have privilege of the floor.
You may.
Members of the Senate, all the way from Sweetwater County, here today watching us out there, we have the director for our Child Developmental Center, Lou Casper. She's and her family have been friends for almost 30 years now, but I'd like you to welcome Lou Casper to the Senate.
Welcome. Senator Hastert, while you're standing up, did we ever bring to a closure that reported incident you mentioned several days ago? Has that been brought to a close?
Mr. President, it has. The guilty party, which I don't see,
is running
somewhere, but it has closed out.
So once again, the process works, I guess, right, Senator Hastert? Reports from standing committees.
January 30, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 150, Long-Acting Reversible Contraception, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Peterson, and Scott. Noes, Senators Boner and Bouchard. Senator Scott, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred Senate File 158, Depositions by Telephone, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred Senate File 154, Sex Offender Registration Accessories, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. President. Pursuant to Senate Rule 5-5, I'd like to make a motion to recall a bill from committee, and I would move that we recall Senate File 123, School Nutrition Pilot Project, from the Education Committee and move it to the Appropriations Committee.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Do we have 3 seconds out there?
Second.
We have 3 seconds. You've all heard the motion. Senator Office, it's a simple majority vote, non-debatable. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That has passed, so Senate File. Has been recalled from committee number 4. Thank you. Now, bills on second reading. Senate File 17, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 17, Municipal Jurisdiction.
Senate File 17, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hear no objections. It is so ordered. Senate File 46, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 46, Appeals by County Assessor.
Senate File 46, having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Senate File 96, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 96, Real Estate Brokers and Salespersons.
Senate File 96, having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 97, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 97, Tobacco Settlement Data Sharing.
Senate File 97, having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senator Coe.
I would request that we lay back Senate File 126 till tomorrow so we can work out some amendments that we're having.
Without objection, Senate File 126 is laid back until second reading tomorrow. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Florida, do you have a consent list?
God, I hope so. Well, you should ask, Mr. President, we do have a consent list. I move 35. Do that again. Third reading consent list, take 2. Mr. President, we do have a consent list. I move 30 reading consent list, which is as follows. Senate File 25, Wildlife Location and Research Information, Confidentiality. Senate File 49, Investment Funds Committee. Senate File 103, Water Project Repayment. Senate File 109, Autocycles. Senate File 111, Nurse Practice Act Revisions. Senate Files 119, Grand Teton National Park, Transfer of State Lands. Senate File 133, Postmortem Despoiling Penalties. Senate File 136, Energy Science Stipends and Fellowships. Senate File 144, Legislator Per Diem, Local Residents.
Would anyone like any of the Senate files removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 25, Wildlife Location and Research Information Confidentiality. Senate File 49, Investment Funds Committee. Senate File 103, Water Project Repayment. Senate File 109, Auto Cycles. Senate File 111, Nurse Practice Act Revisions. Senate File 119, Grand Teton National Park Transfer of State Lands. Senate File 133, Postmortem Despoiling Penalties. Senate File 136, Energy Science Stipends and Fellowships. And Senate File 144, Legislator Per Diem, Local Residents. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll on the consent list?
On the consent list, Agar?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard? Boner, Bouchard,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
aye.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Dockstetter,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Ellis,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nethercott,
aye.
Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
Rothfuss,
Scott,
aye.
Von Platern,
aye.
Wasserberger excused, President Vebout.
Aye.
On the consent list, 29 aye, 1 no. Senate File 25. I'm sorry. 29 aye, 1 excused. Thank you. Senate File 25. Agar, aye to no.
Bouchard, aye to no.
Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 25. 26 aye, 3 no, 1 excused. Senate File 49. Are there any changes?
Vebout, no.
Vebout, Ida, no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 49. 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused. Senate File 103. Are there any changes? Scott, Ida, no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 103, 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused. Senate File 109, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 109, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 111, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 111, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 119, are there any changes?
Vebout, no.
Vebout, no. Closing vote.
Agar,
I don't know. Dockstetter, I don't know. Closing vote.
Bouchard,
I don't know. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 119, 25 aye, 4 no, 1 excused. Senate File 133, are there any changes? Case Ida No. Scott Ida No.
Perkins, Ida
No. Perkins, Ida No.
Hicks, Ida No.
Hicks, Ida No. Dockstetter, Ida No.
Kinski,
Ida No.
Bouchard,
Ida No. Bouchard,
Ida No.
Agar, aye to no.
Rothfuss,
aye to no.
Barnard,
aye to no.
Coe,
aye to no. Closing vote.
Baldwin,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 133. 17 aye, 12 no. 1 excused. Senate File 136, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 136, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 144, are there any changes? Boner, aye to no. Barnard,
aye
to no. And Salmi Dalton, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Closing vote. Perkins, aye to no. Coe, aye to no. Ellis, aye to conflict.
Bebout, aye to no.
Bebout, aye to no. Emmerich?
Aye to conflict.
Emmerich, aye to conflict.
Moniz, aye to no.
Moniz, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Landon, aye to no. Baldwin, aye to no. Nethercott, conflict. Closing vote. Closing, vote closed. Senate File 144, 14 aye, 12 no, 1 excused, 3 conflict.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 25, Wildlife Location and Research Information Confidentiality, Senate File 49, Investment Funds Committee. Senate File 103, Water Project Repayment. Senate File 109, Auto Cycles. Senate File 111, Nurse Practice Act Revisions. Senate File 119, Grand Teton National Park Transfer of State Lands. Senate File 133, Postmortem Despoiling Penalties. And Senate File 136, Energy Sign Stipend and Fellowships have passed the Senate. Senate File 144, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, Senate File 144 has failed to pass the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that business of bills for consideration on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. We're moving right along this morning. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole for consideration of bills on general file.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Ellis, please come forward.
That's pretty efficient, Mr. President. And the general file at 10 by 10:20.
Okay.
Did we do something wrong?
No. Just
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 118. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 118, Food Freedom Act Sales Locations, an act relating to the Food Freedom Act, sponsored by Senator Dockstader, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it gives itself a recommendation
for the mic.
Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 118 do pass. For an explanation of the bill, I turn it over to Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Senator Dockstader.
Test 1, 2. Thank you, Madam Chairman. A couple of years ago, folks, we had great progress in food freedom, make sure people had a chance to go for the food of their choice, and we still continue to see people out there not only selling the product but consuming it, and a lot of these are just your ag-based locations. They go there to find a product that's a little closer to the fresher source. Over the last year or so, we ran into a bit of a conflict. I'll just give you an example. We had one of our providers putting the milk out in a cooler up in the area where it was considered what would be an inspected area. Folks who do such inspections weren't happy with that, so I go to those folks who have the do such inspections. I say, how can we find some compromise that these businesses can still keep the product out there and make it available, but still keep things in line with those who are involved with the inspection process? And so with that, we brought along 118 with the main changes coming in on page 2, where we still allow for the sale at the ranch, home, the farm. But down along lines 9, we have it with a properly designated sign. It's a commercial establishment. Then we go through the following steps. Down along about 18, we separate it with a door and a cash register, keep it separated from that which is inspected. Put a sign out marking it as inspected or uninspected. Over on page 3, we go to along about 4. We separate the coolers, the freezers, the storage areas. And then along about line 9, we have the kind of all-encompassing wrap-up language to inform the consumer. And what we're trying to do here, folks, is find that compromise. While we still keep the product out there and available, how do we work it in with those who want to make sure that we're following the rules and the regulations, and we got a separation of what is essentially, I could say, raw, the back to the basic food, with that which is inspected, that which is approved for inspection and sale. We're trying to find a compromise between two different parties here. Those who like that basic, back to the basic product, raw product, and those who still enjoy shopping at a farm but want to know, has that been approved for inspection or is it not? And so this is the compromise that we went to the folks who do the inspections. They say this has how it fits in as we work with the folks who track the books over to a certain agency. They wanted to know that it was still something that could move forward, but still keep it all in the realm of what's legal and what's not. And so I went to the folks who are selling it, and they said, well, that's a good start to the compromise. We can still offer our product. We just have to kind of separate it out, separate room, separate cooler. It's all marked. This is inspected for sale. This is approved. This is not. So that's the compromise we came up with. SF 118, ask for your approval.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 118, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. The bill has passed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 122. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 122, Water Development Amendments, an Act Relating to Water Development, sponsored by Senator Hicks, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hicks?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 122 do pass. Madam Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, if I could have that read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
Senate File 122, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Hicks?
I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 122. For an explanation of this good little bill, I'll call on myself. Members of the committee, you should have a handout on your table, and I'm going to call your attention to that as we walk through that. So if you get that handy, it should say Senate File 122, 413101, Nature of Water Rights and Beneficial Use. This is going to be imperative to understanding where we're going with this particular piece of legislation. With that, I'm going to walk you through the bill. We'll come back and do the standing committee amendments. They pull out several provisions in the bill. But before we get into this, let me explain the nature and the purpose of the bill. So currently in statutes, it's pretty routine that we go in, especially when we deal with water development. As you'll see on page 2, line 14, page 4, line 5, line 7. When we get into all the water development programs, most of the language that you look at is the criteria in the program uses the terminology public benefit. In other words, to be able to utilize and participate in those programs with the state of Wyoming, the application routinely discussed what's the public benefit or the nature of the project. If we go back to the statutes, what you find, it routinely uses the terminology public interest. When I started looking at this, one of the problems that we run into, there's no definitions of statutes of either what constitutes public interest or public benefit. That's really the meat of this entire bill, is to try to get to that issue, is what constitutes public benefit. So let's just jump into the bill. So what the bill does is go into those particular statutes and basically just change it from public interest to public benefit. So here's the real meat of the bill. If you go to page 3, line 15, we bring in a definition of what constitutes public benefit. So public benefit means the use of Wyoming's water for beneficial use is defined in statute or determined by the state engineer. Now, a little history there. Currently, the state engineer's office maintains on their website a database that shows everything that the legislature has ever codified that constitutes a beneficial use of water within the state of Wyoming. There's two provisions for which a beneficial use of water can be designated. One of them is through a legislative act, and historically they have allowed the state engineer's office, with consultation of the governor, to also come out and define what constitutes a beneficial use of water. The second alternative through the state engineer's office has only been used a very number of limited times. The last time was almost 25 years ago. So if we walk through the rest of the bill. So I want to bring your attention to, so those that are not well immersed in water law, what is beneficial use? So if you go to the handout, you'll see that it defines on what beneficial use is. So beneficial use shall be the basis, the measure, and the limit of the right to use all water at all times within the state of Wyoming. So it will enumerate what those beneficial uses is. Here's the other important component that brings this in under existing statute, that water being always the property of the state of Wyoming. Now, the state can grant you a water right, which is the ability, basically the state is conveying in you as a water right holder the ability to use the state's property. Even under this language, if we look at beneficial use, it says beneficial use made for which right receives public recognition. Now we're back to the public benefit component. So what we tried to do is tie the existing definition of public benefit back to existing water law that recognizes those beneficial uses. That's really the meat of the bill, but what I want to do is there. What I'd like to do now is jump into the Standing Committee Amendment. So what the Standing Committee Amendment does is it strikes a few things from the title because we're going to go, or not the title, but in the Enabling Act. On page 5, lines 7 through 16, we're going to delete that whole section. When I started looking into this bill, there had a provision that the boards and commission was received a salary plus compensation. I had LSO do a research on this. Out of the 30 different boards and commissions that we have around the state, it's so variable. It ranges all over the place. I give the memo to the management council to look at. At this point in time, it makes no sense to mess with this border commission, given that we have a much broader issue that there's no parity across the board for the 30-some boards and commissions that we have. We're going to strike that language out of there. The next provision is, go to page 7 in the Standing Committee Amendment, lines 13 and 14. We're going to strike the rule and regulation. Currently, the state engineer, through the governor's office, has the authority to do this now. Again, this brings in a bigger issue. At this point in time, the committee didn't feel it was necessary to include that language. The only other provision in the Standing Committee that's substantive is it changes the date of enactment to immediate upon all acts necessary. With that, Madam Chairman, I'd stand for any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1.
Question. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Question has been called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 122, Senator Hicks's motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? We're back on the bill. Is there any discussion on the bill? Senator Hicks? Oh, and I apologize, Mr. President, members, that amendment had passed. President Bebout?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a question for the sponsor of the bill. And in our Constitution, under priority of appropriation, it uses the word specifically by the public interest. And we're changing it here to now public benefit. And I know we're wordsmithing, but a little more discussion as to why we're different than the Constitution. I understand this is prior to appropriation, which is a different scenario, but still I wonder why we want to change that.
Senator Hicks?
Madam Chairman, and we're working on a second committee amendment at this point in time, I think, that will help address some of that issue. And I think we're going to narrow the definition of what constitutes public benefit, specifically just to these programs, that being part of the answer, I think, to the president's question. The other answer is, quite frankly, I don't have one. Again, it's because it's the current nomenclature, while it is in the Constitution. But I think once we narrow that definition with a specific to these programs, it might take care of that, although we're still amending it in law. We're not amending it in our Constitution.
Oh, Senator Kinski? Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, I have a question. We were told that the heart of the bill is on definition of public benefit on page 3, line 15, and it rightly defines the beneficial use of water as a public benefit. The question I've got is that's also a private benefit. People are going to use that water beneficially. They're going to make money out of it. Does this in any way change the payment that the private individuals that are getting the benefit of using that water have to make for their share of the project? Does it potentially mean that the public's going to pick up some of that more than we already do? Does it in any way change the right now to have a project constructed with state aid to conform with Article 16, Section 6, you've got to have a public entity. Does this new definition in any way change any of that? Madam Chairman, I'm really looking to see if there are implications in this change we're making on page 3 that go just beyond the common sense that, yes, all these waters putting, all these efforts to put water to beneficial use are helpful to the public.
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. A question for my colleague from Bags. As I peruse the statute and look at this proposed change, I'm concerned and as to whether we're handing over more power and authority to the state engineer than is true currently. Specifically, I'm concerned about in-stream flow, which has been so hotly debated through the decades in Wyoming. Would this enable the state engineer, and not our current one, but a future state engineer, to take actions that might cement into law minimum stream flows that could come at the detriment of agriculture? Thank you, Madam Chairwoman.
Senator Meyer, did you want to speak?
I'm okay.
Senator Rossfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm interested in understanding better the history of these terms. And my understanding of water law in Wyoming is that it has a robust case law associated with it. There's a tremendous amount of history that goes into these terms of public interest, public benefit, and I'm concerned that we're cleaning something up in a way that might substantially change previous court decisions and the interpretation of those decisions. And so I'd like a little bit of discussion on what might happen as a result of the change of public interest to public benefit and then a new definition that would then potentially obviate prior court decisions that were relying on public interest as being the relevant term of art.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, I'll try to go through these in sequential order. So to my colleague from Natrona County referencing the public use per component of this, currently, if you're going to utilize the program, that's already a requirement on the program, is you have to identify those public uses. So I don't see that this bill changes that from a standpoint of being able to participate in those programs. You're already going to have to demonstrate some level of public benefit. So does this alter or change the relationship? I don't believe so. We're just defining it as to what constitutes that. It's already in statutes. Here's one of the fundamental underlying problems is that changes. And it changes because as the commission changes or somebody changes, there is no definition. So it's really whatever the current commission or the next commission or the commission after that determines what constitutes a public benefit. The uncertainty of that language, I think, is what we're trying to really get at here, is because it's whatever they want to determine that is today may not be the same definition. And that same issue will come back, I think, to the good senator from Albany County's discussion. Is it synonymous? Is public interest and public benefit synonymous? And how is that going to affect court history? Well, the first question would be is it synonymous? I think we have to investigate that a little bit. But the way it's currently right now is we would revert back to those previous case history. But we do not have a definition in statute as to what constitutes either public interest or public benefit, because we use the common terminology now of public benefit. So to answer that question, we have to first look at and say, is public benefit and public interest a synonymous terminology? I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't have the answer to that question. And then my colleague from Sheridan County is, does this grant the state engineer the right to go out and designate something new? He currently has that right, as long as it's in consultation with the executive branch to bring in something new. Those beneficial uses are already enumerated. They're maintained on a website. The history of the state engineer's office doing that, the last time that occurred, was about 25 years ago. It's been very, very limited in its use and scope. I think that's certainly something we could look at going forward, but I don't see how this bill changes those beneficial uses already maintained on that website. You'll see what we did do is to make sure that there's a transparent public process associated with that, as this does codify in the state engineer's that he must maintain that on the website and make it available for public instruction. Right now, it's completely at the state engineer's discretion as to whether he wants to maintain that or not. But through good public policy and transparency, this basically says you will maintain that list at all times on your website and make it available in print in your office. Madam Chairman, I don't know if that answers all the questions, but that's the best attempt I have at this point in time. To do a little more work on, as again, I would tell you that there is some discussion that we're working on a second reading amendment to narrow that definition of public benefit down specifically to the opportunity to participate in these programs.
Are you ready for the question?
Madam Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I'm still a little concerned, and I'm not as familiar with these statutes as I might be. Is there anything that determines the share the public pays for and the share that the private individuals who benefit pay for that hinges on this definition of public benefit? And are we, with this bill, are we changing anything in the proportion of the cost of these projects that is borne by the sponsors and that's borne directly by the Water Development Commission?
Senator Hicks?
Madam Chairman, specifically that answer is no. It does not change that ratio. Those are established in criteria already. This won't affect that in any way or any fashion right now.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 122, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. Senate File 122 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 129. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 129, Sexual Assault School Employee, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sponsored by Senator Boner, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 129, Sexual Assault by School Employee. And to present the bill will be Senator Boner.
Thank you, Senator Boner.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chairman. This Senate file is an attempt to address some inconsistencies in our current statutes as it deals with the societal trust we place in our school districts. And when we send our kids to school, they're not going to be subject to predatory sexual behavior on the part of a member of a school district employee. These folks have unsupervised access to our kids in some of their most vulnerable times. It's important that we make sure we're absolutely covered when it comes to ensuring their safety and promoting an effective learning environment. And just to start off on that point, you can imagine what happens in a school when this sort of behavior is going on openly. There are no legal consequences, and the behavior is allowed to continue. That's detrimental to our learning environment. Certainly, something to consider as we talk about, you know, accountability. I understand that usually deals with test scores and graduation rates, but I just ask you, first of all, to consider what happens to that learning environment, considering the tremendous resources that we spend in our K-12 system. So, but the more to the point, we're trying to get at the criminal behavior, the predatory behavior of somebody using that access that they have to a vulnerable population in our K-12 system to engage in sexually exploitive activity. And so the way that we go about attempting to remedy this situation is you'll see under second-degree sexual assault, we add a new subparagraph 9, basically stipulating that the actor is employed or a volunteer of a school in K-12, and who by virtue of their employment or their association with the school district has interaction with the victim. And that's very important because we're actually making for a very narrow definition, and that it would be a burden of the state to prove using clear and convincing evidence that this relationship developed because of that employee's employment or volunteer relationship with the school. So we're casting a very small net here, attempting to get at the truly criminal predatory behavior. Also, we made an exception for folks who are less than 4 years older than the victim. We don't want to capture maybe somebody who's within that time frame. We feel like that's far less criminal and consistent with our sexual abuse of a minor statutes, that four-year period. The rest of the bill is simply adding throughout the rest of our statutes in second-degree sexual assault and third-degree sexual assault that reference to the Roman numeral number 9. And so that's just basically clean up the rest of the bill. The meat of the bill is on pages 2 and 3. So just a little bit more background. According to the federal government, 10% of our kids in K-12 environment will face some sort of sexual abuse on the behalf of a teacher or staff. That's 10%. That's a 2004 study. That's the most recent data we have on this particular subject matter. If you apply that to the state of Wyoming per year, that technically amounts to about 700 kids per year. Now, even if that number is half or a quarter of what those statistics say, I still say that there's a significant issue that needs to be addressed. It's not being addressed currently, and this is one step that we can take to ensure that nobody's slipping through the cracks, and that we do in fact have a safe and effective learning environment, and make sure that societal trust is well placed. That when we send our kids to school, they're not going to be subject to predatory sexual behavior. So that's the idea behind the bill. That's how we attempt to go about remedying the current situation, and certainly stand for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Boner. Is there any discussion on the bill? Senator Rossus.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I'm curious about a couple of exceptions that we discussed when we previously visited over this bill. I see the language is tightened, but there are still some circumstances that concern me, and I'd ask the sponsor about a circumstance where you had an 18-year-old who is a senior in high school, who has consensual sex with a 23-year-old volunteer at that high school. And they do have some type of interaction, but that would be a violation under this act, and it seems that it would almost be a surprise to those individuals that would be a violation. The other is you could easily have a circumstance where you have a married individual who is 17 years old, and that married individual's spouse is 5 years older, and actually chooses to volunteer at the school because of the marriage and their relationship. So they now are showing up at the school to volunteer at the school, having been married and had consensual sex, and now
the moment they volunteer at the school, they are a potential felon. And I'm curious about how we should address and read this statute so that it does not preclude that circumstance.
Further discussion? Senator Boner?
Hey, so I thank the minority floor leader for those very good questions. First, as far as the technical aspect of the four-year exception, like I said, that's consistent with our sexual assault of a minor statutes. There's nothing magic about 4 years. Could be five or whatever the case may be. But just most importantly, I want to direct the body's attention to the language on page 3, lines 1 and 2, that this relationship would have to come about by virtue of the person's employment or volunteer status in the school district. So in the instance where there's a previous relationship, that would certainly not apply. And once again, that burden would be on the state to provide clear and convincing evidence that this relationship came to fruition because of the contact in the school. Once again, we're getting at people using their position in the school district to engage in this predatory behavior. So certainly a consideration that went into the crafting of this language you see on that extra paragraph we're adding, and that's exactly why, because of the concerns that the minority floor leader just expressed.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want to commend the work of my fellow senator and bring the body's attention to the top of page 3. I'm just sitting here this morning wondering and wanting to make sure that this language would pertain, for example, to someone on a college campus. We have a lot of our K-12 students who actually go to those campuses and take part in activities and classes. And if it doesn't pertain to that particular employee of the state, I just wonder going along if we want to have that conversation, because we do have quite a few of our high school students who do make that trip and are taking classes elsewhere. So just food for thought on that, but again, I commend the work on the bill.
Senator Raffes.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Following up on my prior concern, and I appreciate the response from the good senator from Converse County, if the language is taken from sexual assault of a minor, one of the concerns that I raised was that this individual does not have to be a minor. I don't believe there's any language here that requires that. I might be wrong. Perhaps there's some other part that requires them to be a minor, but as I read this, an 18-year-old senior in high school would still be potentially a victim under Roman at 9. So I'd ask for clarification on that instance. And I'd ask for a further clarification on a circumstance. I understand that by virtue of their employment or volunteer relationship, the implication there is that's how they have established a relationship. I believe that's the case. At that point, if they had a relationship beforehand, does that obviate Romanet 9 in its entirety? So they met previously, but now they have interaction. My understanding, based on testimony, is that would then make Romanet 9 moot. I don't believe that's the intent. But there is also the possibility, then, of these individuals establishing a relationship which is not involving any type of sexual intrusion, as indicated in A, and then ending up developing a relationship, getting married through this, and then having consensual sex afterwards. And my understanding is, even at that point in time, while marriage is legal at age 16, it would still be a violation of Romanet 9. So I'd ask for further clarification on those points.
Further discussion? Senator Boner?
Hey, thank you, Madam Chairman. I certainly appreciate the thought from my colleague from Natrona County. First of all, we can certainly look into the details of how that pertains to somebody who's still in high school but going to a college campus, and see where we want to draw the line there, if any. And I'll certainly look into that and get back to him on that. And as to the idea, First of all, we didn't, just to be clear, we didn't really use any of the language from our sexual abuse of a minor statute. So we just used that principle of the four-year gap. The intention is absolutely to cover students who may be 18, 19, 20 years old. And the fact being that if you're still in high school, that your situation has not changed. And even in those students who are a little bit older, haven't demonstrated the maturity to graduate from high school, I'd submit to you that this is a very bright, clear line. That is a much better gauge of a student's maturity level than whether they've happened to have been alive for 18 years or not. So we have the option of using that bright, clear line whether they're in the school district or not. So that's certainly where I think is most appropriate. So that relationship between the student and teacher is still the exact same whether the student's 17, 18. as to the idea that somebody could meet the other person in high school and then develop a relationship later, I think the language on the top of page 2, the one that says what qualifies for second-degree sexual assault, any act who inflicts sexual intrusion or, and so on, that sexual intrusion will have to happen during that time frame while they're a member of the school district, while they're still in school. So certainly could double check or triple check with the attorneys to make sure that is in fact the case and we're not entrapping people who maybe develop or who happen to meet during the time the student is in school. But I would like to think that and the way that this has been applied and other cases would indicate to me that that sexual intrusion or sexual contact would actually have to happen during that student's time in the school system.
Further discussion? Senator Rothfuss?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just one more. As I understand this language also, and based on that prior explanation, if the student were to drop out of school as a senior, this would apply prior to the dropout, but the moment they drop out from high school, then there would be no possibility of a violation of Romanent 9, so that would be a pathway to allow the student and teacher to have this sexual intrusion take place. Is that accurate?
Thank you, Senator Rothfuss. Senator Boner?
Madam Chairman, that is accurate. There has to be a compelling or a state interest at stake here. Clearly, if the student is no longer in the school system, that doesn't necessarily exist. And just reminding, I mean, we're talking about somebody dropping out of high school where there still are sexual abuse of a minor statutes, which may apply to that situation.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 129, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. No. Senate File 129 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 115. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 115, Malicious Cruelty to Animals, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sponsored by Senator Christensen, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chair.
You have heard the reading of the bill, Senator Christensen, or what is your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable consideration on Senate File 115, Malicious Cruelty to Animals. And I'll go ahead and present the bill. If we could read in the amendment.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
Senate File 115, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, lines 5 through 8.
Madam Chairman, I'll go ahead and talk about a little history and then go to the amendment. Members of the Senate, the suggestion for this bill came about as a result of a dog here in our host city that was shot several times on the owner's property. And they came and they talked about it and they said, you know, under existing statute, if the dog would have died, it would have been a felony. If it had to have been put down, it would have been a felony. In this case, due to the damage, and the owner made a choice, but it didn't qualify under that low felony So we got talking about it, and I suggested that they talk to the animal growers around the state. And they went to an organization and proposed, shared their concern. And what this bill has come from is both not only your local animal adoption centers, but also livestock producers. And I think we've covered a pretty wide range. Let me talk about the reason livestock producers were interested in this bill is we are seeing, and we have for some time, where pretty malicious shooting of animals, livestock, either out on the in the lease allotments, in pastures, out on the range, where they may shoot the animal not to kill it, but maybe to mutilate it, and the result isn't death, but it may, in the case of a bull, sterilize it. And then you have the bad outcome that when the ag producer preg test his herd that winter, he finds out that half of them didn't take. So there can be a lot of different consequences in something like this. So we came forward with some language in the bill, and after wrestling with it in committee, came up with really an amendment that doesn't change it significantly, but it certainly, I think, eases and makes it more understandable. And so on the amendment really does talk about the whole bill. And so if you can go to the amendment, I'd move the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Christensen.
On the amendment, on that page, this is Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, the Senate File 115. Starts down at line 3, acts with malicious intent in any manner, including shooting or placing poison to seriously injure or destroy an animal owned by that person while the animal is on the property owned by that person or on which the animal is authorized to be present. So this is pretty narrow. This is in the case of the pet owner in this city. They shot onto that person's property, shooting its animal. We've seen it in other communities where there's been poison thrown over fences, placed to try to kill or injure the animals. And just in this city, one of our good members of the legislature used to work in the animal profession, animal veterinary profession. We won't name anybody. But I counted on folks shooting horses in this community. And so that happens around the state. But again, the description or what it defines is the shooting or placing of poison onto that property or other things with similar malicious intent, and then with the intent of seriously destroy or injure that animal. To define that property, it could be your yard, it could be your pasture if you're the victim, or range land that you've leased or pasture you've rented. But it also extends to the county fair, for an example, in the livestock pens or animals being shown. It also extends to when it says to which the animal is authorized to be present. It may be if your pet or your animal is in another person's pasture, so forth. So that's the essence of the bill. I'd ask for the vote on Senate File 115, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Is there any discussion? Question on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 115, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment passes. Senator Christensen.
Madam Chairman, I'd just like to apologize to the 7 members of the Senate that didn't get to co-sponsor. I just didn't have time to get to you. With that, I'd stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, question. If you have your pet with you and you're out walking on state lease land or BLM land, is that animal authorized to be present on that land?
Further discussion? Senator Christensen?
Madam Chairman, if I think the plain reading of this is if it's on land you've leased, I would say yes. If it's just out in the general forest, then this level of malicious intent probably doesn't apply.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 115, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Senate File 115 has passed Committee of the Whole. Wake up. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 91. The reading clerk, will you please read the bill?
Senate File 91, Small Water Projects, an Act Relating to Water Development, sponsored by Senator Hicks. It was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, Moniz. No, Senator Barnard. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hicks?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do with the recommendation that Senate File 91 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, if I could have that read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
Senate File 91, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 19.
Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 91. I'll defer to myself for an explanation of the bill. Members of the body, to get you up to speed, you got a couple of handouts that were attached to the last one. I want to walk you through this when the first one says Senate File 91, because this is basically the flow chart for what the bill does, and then we'll deal with the standing committee amendment later. So if you go to that, go to the first one, and it shows, you got this one in front of you. So let me tell you what the genesis of this is. We've got a program right now where we, the legislature, give a block grant to the Water Development Office, and then they choose the projects that they want to fund out of that. And right now there's no legislative oversight of that process. Once we do the block grant, the money goes there. It's pretty much up to the commission as to what they want to fund out of that or don't want to fund out of that. We dealt with a similar issue with the statewide water research program a couple years, and at that time it was the feeling of the body that they wanted to bring those projects back under the full legislative purview. So let's walk through what this bill does. So if you'll pick that first one up, the first line as it goes across is the existing program. So the applications are due in December. The commission reviews those in March. We take that up as part of the omnibus water bill. Where that's where the current block grant is. We already dealt with that in the planning bill. The money's appropriated in March, and then those contracts approved by the commission are then signed by the sponsor and sometime in April. So here's what we're doing with the bill. So if you go to the next line down there, you will actually have to move the application date up sometime between August and October. The commission now reviews those in November instead of March. Then the Select Water Committee reviews the recommendations of the Water Development Commission. That becomes the omnibus water bill that the Select Water, that comes to the legislature in January and February. Once that bill signed into law in March, we have an annual appropriation instead of a biennial appropriation. The contracts are then signed in April. What I want to do is bring your attention to the schematic that's attached to that that says Senate File 91. So based on the action that this body took last week on the omnibus water bill, where we stripped almost a little over $1 million out of the Level 1 Watershed Study Program, what the schematic does is show you the scenario above right now, that those applications are due in August. You have to have a Level 1 Watershed Study. That's 100% state-funded by the state. The average cost of those is running about $300,000 per study. It takes anywhere from 1 to 2 years to get those studies done. You reapply for an actual project in December, and then that swap contract would be signed. Under those small water projects, it is a 50-50 cost share, not to exceed $35,000 contribution from the state. That's an existing law under the non-codified water law. In effect, what we did when we stripped that $1.1 million out of that planning bill, though, there's a requirement that they have to do a Level 1 watershed study. What the standing committee amendment does to Senate File 90, and we'll get to that, is the next section down where currently you'll do your application in August of October, but now because of if this legislation passed, we've eliminated the requirement for the Level 1 watershed study. You go right into the small water program. You still have to meet all the criteria in there. So it's about an 8-month process instead of almost a 2 to 3 year process to be able to get those small water projects on the ground. Now, back on the bill, I want to walk you through the bill. Now you get the concept of what we're doing here is we're bringing the small water program under the purview of the legislature. Right now, we just block grant the money out there. So what this effectively does is insert the Select Water Committee in that now the Water Development Commission will recommend projects to the Select Water Committee. If they concur with those recommendations, they will go into the Omnibus Water Bill as a list of small water projects. Talking to the director, the way that will look, if this legislation moves forward, you will have a small water omnibus bill, an omnibus planning, and an omnibus construction bill. So if we go through the bill, we're going to bring in a couple of components. Title 28 deals with select committees, that provision in there. So if we go over to page 2, we go into Title 28. This just says that the review of the budgets of all projects now come under the purview of the Select Water Committee, including the Small Water Program. Currently, they do not. So if we go into the next section in 41.2.112, Wyoming Water Development Program, all the language that's currently in there is currently in statutes, but it's in the non-codified section of the water law. We're just bringing into that now because we're bringing the program in to legislative purview. We're going to bring those statutes in out of the non-codified water law right now. So everything that you see there is currently in the non-codified section all the way from the bottom of page 2, page 3, page 4. We get over there. We go into definitions. We modify that definition just a little bit. We bring in the word some additional language there and the standing committee amendment. I'll get to that a little bit later. Then we get over to page 5. This is the non-codified under Title 99, Level 3 construction, same thing down there. That goes into those water development accounts. One deals with the rehab, and one of them deals with new developments. And then you get through the back page, the effective date. We've got a revision that comes back in there on page 6. This program had a sunset date of 2025 because we're eliminating the block grant component of this. Those revisions that are left over at the end of this cycle will come back into account 1 or account 2, depending on where it was originally drawn from. With that, members, I'd like to walk you through the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 91. So the real meat of the committee amendment, other than most of the cleanup language, comes in on the Standing Committee Amendment. It says the eligibility shall. And this is a direct result. The first one is a direct result of the action that we took with regards to the planning bill, where we stripped that $1.1 million out for the watershed studies. Effectively, what we've done is we blocked those people from being able to participate in the small water program now because there's no funding or reduced level of funding. Not all those studies are going to get funding. What this does is says under the new I, it shall not be a requirement for a watershed study. That gets back to the schematic. Basically, you'll submit an application, still has to meet all the criteria, but you go right to being eligible without having to spend the $300,000 or $350,000 on the study. The second component of that under Romanet 2 brings in a new component in here that's always been a problem with the water development programs. What we have in the existing program now is we have this giant donut hole in there, for the lack of a better description. So we fund the large projects, and we fund, which the criteria is you have to go through, you have to have 2,000 irrigated acres, a minimum of 25 taps. Those are the criteria to get into that program. The problem is under the small program, we've limited it so narrow But you have this whole range of potential water projects out there that aren't eligible. So if they exceed $135,000, they're not eligible for the program. So what the new 2 does is says provide that any project that does not meet the eligibility criteria for a large project program shall be eligible for a small water project program. All that does is it gets rid of the donut hole. If you got a $140,000 project and you're willing to take $35,000 is the grant from the state for that program, you're eligible under this program. Before, you couldn't get into the big program. You couldn't get into the small program. If you did get into the big program, it's because you had to aggregate a bunch of stuff. And then you still had to go through a level one and a level two study to be able to get there. This just gives those proponents of those projects the opportunity to move right into the small water project. We go down the rest of the standing committee amendment. We strike the word small. We've inserted irrigation into definition. We've deleted part of the line on page 14, line 13, to clean that language up. And then if we get to on page 4, we bring in the description. And again, this gets rid of that donut hole where we get rid of that $35,000 cap. That was just an arbitrary cap that was established. The intent was there is if it's a $135,000 project or larger, that it should go into the large project program. The trouble is the criteria is they can't get in there. So it was an arbitrary cap to begin with. It really serves no purpose. So we got rid of that, and then we go down to page 4 on line 18. Again, this is existing criteria in the program. The state and the small water program will only fund 50% of the cost of the project, not to exceed $35,000. With that, I would ask for your favorable consideration of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 91.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, question on Standing Committee Amendment Lines 7 through 9 relating to the criteria on the Standing Committee Amendment. Says provide that any project does not meet the eligibility criteria for a large project. Suppose the eligibility criteria they don't meet is that they are strictly privately owned, and we'd have a 16-6 violation if we put them in as a project. Is this open the door to that problem? I understand what you're doing in the way of size criteria, but that's not the only eligibility criteria. You do have to be publicly owned for a large project. And here we back door saying you can be strictly privately owned and get into these small projects.
Senator Hicks?
Madam Chairman, to address that, I think that's a constitutional issue that we can't fund private interest corporations with public funds, so I don't see the statutes going to overturn the Constitution. Even further, while this opens it up, you still have to meet all those other criteria. And the Commission still has a list of things that you have to, which one of them is you have to be a public entity to be eligible for the programs. Just says if the project doesn't fit here, it's eligible to fit here. Doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to get picked or funded because it still has to meet all of those existing criteria.
Further discussion on the amendment, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question is this. I mean, we get into and we look at, we're talking moments ago about the Constitution and this finding of public interest. And when you look at that that article in that section, section 3, it talks about that you can't deny appropriation to water without a public interest in our state constitution. And so I guess when you have a small water project, my understanding is you're most likely capturing runoff groundwater runoff, which may or may not be appropriated water. Somebody may or may not have those property rights, and so my question is how if if the small water project is it potentially has the ability to divert or stop downstream flow, even potentially, or otherwise deny a person their appropriation of water right because it's now going to be restrained in a small reservoir, how do you get past the public interest in this period? How do you satisfy that constitutional public that constitutional requirement that there be public interest if you're going to do that?
Senator Meyer?
Thank you. First of all of these small water projects, you're going to have an appropriated water right because you have to have it put to beneficial use. So, you know, that bar is crossed from that standpoint. And the public interest really is if you look at beneficial use, and on the handout here, it shall be the basis, the measure, and the limit of the right to use water at all times. So if you're going to use water, you have to put it to beneficial use. When the water is applied to as a beneficial use, then you're applying the state's water, which is the water of the state. It's always the state's water. And you're applying it in a manner that's beneficial. And so essentially, that gets back to public interest, is that you're beneficially applying the water. I don't know if it's clear. It's a little circular argument, but essentially that you have to have an appropriation. It has to first you have to have a public entity that requests to be in the small water project. The watershed studies help develop, I guess, a broad overall perspective of the whole watershed and how different water would come in. But if you don't get the new appropriation, if it's going to do a harm to a current appropriator, essentially the state engineer takes that into consideration before they actually issue the permit for appropriation. So he has to make the determination that the water is available for use. And so there's some other areas that we'll get into here at some point in time when you're looking at huge, huge water irrigation projects. But most of these are small projects where it's of de minimis nature. And that's, 20, 30 acre feet of water that's stored necessarily doesn't have any impact on the whole system. They're stock ponds, they're holding ponds. That's why they are small projects, when you put new water to use. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And so I just want to clarify, I think what I heard, at least the way I interpreted what I just heard, was all water in Wyoming is the property of the state, and therefore if it's put to beneficial use, that seems to, at least if what I heard was that because it's water of the state and it's put to beneficial use, that satisfies any public interest requirement. I think that's what I just heard. And then the other part I heard is I'm a little bit unsure about, and again, I'm bringing this up because this is on the amendment, because we're talking about this on basically these conditions or parts of lines four through nine on the amendment as they fit into the entire bill. So you've got that, but then I'm also trying to figure out how we get around when assuming that if that's the correct interpretation, that beneficial use equals public interest or public benefit, if that's what we end up defining public benefit as, and that it still doesn't become a prohibited appropriation under Article 3, Section 36 regarding you can't do it to anybody who's not under the absolute control of the state. And so ultimately, while the appropriation may be to the Water Development Commission, and there's a contract that goes out for that, ultimately that the ultimate benefit or the ultimate benefit is to a private individual. I'm just trying to understand how this navigates through those constitutional requirements. And I think I've got half of it anyway.
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm going to kind of back into this because I just want to reiterate or further define the first question that the good majority floor leader is how does this protect other individuals from somebody doing a small water? So the three pillars of all Western water laws is, number one, the water belongs to the state. Number two, that you have to be able to beneficially use that water before you can acquire a right in it. And the third, and I think this speaks to directly to the question, is prior appropriation doctrine. A junior guy that comes on today through a small water program can't damage a senior water rights holder, and that's the very foundation of Western water law. So getting back to what my colleague from Goshen Sound says, that's why we have the state engineer's office. Every one of these is going to have a priority date attached for it if there is new water. Now, keep in mind, not all of these are going to be new developments. Existing, we have rehab programs in here all the way. And so it's not all about new water. Sometimes it's about replacing aged infrastructure, head gates, diversion structures, that type of thing. So those are other projects that are eligible. So to get back to the constitutional question, how do we get around the Constitution? And we're not trying to get around the Constitution. What I see is this basically instills that says this is consistent with the Constitution. We'll get some clarification on that issue of public benefit and the other terminology that escapes me right now. But keep in mind, even now, if we modify that definition, which we're going to bring back, of public benefit, you still have to meet all of those other eligibility criteria that are established in state statutes. You have to be a public entity. You have to put it to beneficial use. You have to comply with the prior appropriation doctrine. None of that changes. So the question becomes, is a little bit rhetorical, Madam Chairman, if we're currently funding small water projects now and have for quite a few years, what's changed? This doesn't change anything regarding those questions that have been asked as far as to the public benefit to a private individual through the state granting that water right. The only thing this bill really does, and that component, it puts the Select Water Committee in front of that. So the question I think that the majority floor leader raises is are what we currently doing meet the test of constitutionality with the program or not? All the more reason that we probably should bring it into the legislative purview to make sure that, in fact, that might be happening.
Discussion on the amendment. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the amendment, but if you'll give me permission just to reference one line in the bill.
Sure.
Okay. In the section on 99-3-101, which is the projects that the Water Commission is allowed to give public money for, it references a sponsor. And all the way through this bill, it will reference a section, then you go to that section, and it says, must follow 99-3-101A-2, which means sponsor means a municipality, conservancy district, irrigation district, water district, improvement and service district, blah, blah, blah. All government entities, and then there is one line in the bill, page 3, line 4, that says the project sponsor. So with that related to this, and then you can follow it all the way through, I think you'll come up with the only person they can give money to is a public entity.
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, in further answer to the question that was raised about prior appropriation, just to reinforce the answer, if you look at Article 8, Section 3, priority of appropriation for beneficial uses shall give the better right. So speaking to water, that requirement is constitutional, and our systems are well designed to protect that.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. And almost done beating this horse, Madam Chairman. So it comes down to this. I mean, you look at Article 9, Section 3, and the purpose, as I understood the watershed study, so, and I'm referring now specifically to lines 4 and 5 of the amendment, is to not include any requirement for a watershed study. And my understanding was that while overpriced and frustratingly expensive and of limited value in many instances, certainly not in all instances, the purpose of the watershed studies were to demonstrate the public interest was being met in some degree. And so without that in there, where's the finding, or what is the finding, or how was there a, is there going to be any other kind of finding by our public agency, our Water Development Commission, that this is of the, this satisfies the public interest or public benefit requirement?
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chairman, if you'll allow me just a second, and I can answer that question. So here's a, members of the body, this is the actual application for the small water project. So in lieu of doing the watershed studies that we talked about, that went out and attempted to, and I will use the word attempted, to define what the public benefit was of participating in the small water project, last year, the commission adopted new criteria for the small water project. So just let me read what this is. It has a new section under the criteria. It says public benefit. Wyoming statute 993-1903 requires small water project sponsors to substantiate the public benefit that is derived from the proposed project. So again, getting back to the eligibility criteria, even if we get rid of the level one watershed studies, when you as a project sponsor submit this application, you have to quantify what that public benefit is. And if you don't, you don't meet the eligibility criteria and you don't get funded under the small water project. I hope that answers Majority Floor Leader's question.
Colleagues, we are on the amendment. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, and where you're getting rid of that requirement on the large projects. Remember, on the previous bill, we're changing public benefit to include any beneficial use of water, and that is consistent with Article 8, Section 3 on the priority appropriation.
Discussion on the amendment? Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 91, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 91 has passed. We are back on the bill. Is there discussion on the bill? Senator, or Mr. President?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a little more discussion. And I think some of the constitutional issues were discussed at length in the Standing Committee Amendment. But back to the bill, Madam Chairman. And when you go to page 3, lines 4, here again we use that word public benefit. And, you know, we've talked about Article 8, Section 3, and, of course, it says public interest. And I want to take it one step further, and I realize that we've been doing these projects all along, and I realize the whole purpose of the bill is to get the Select Water Committee involved. The question I have is as far as becoming a property right. So you have a small project, and so I apply to that. You know, I'm not going to get into whether it has to be a, you know, a subdivision or a property of the state that was brought up by the vice president. But if, in fact, I do that and I set up to try to do a small water project, is part of that small water project have anything to do with in-stream flow? And there, in fact, if you do that in a small water project, does that now become a property right?
Senator Hicks?
Madam Chairman, the answer is no. And the reason is because anything to do with in-stream flow is not included. So if we go back to the definitions on page 4, and you look at what the definition of a small water project means, it means construction, rehabilitation, replacement of dams, windmills, springs, pipelines, or other projects to impound, develop, or convey water for irrigation, livestock, wildlife, environmental, and recreational purposes. Well, actually, I think maybe the idea that you could do it under the environmental component, if you go into the criteria, they actually got a definition for what eligible projects are in their criteria, not in the statutes under environmental. My recollection is it doesn't mention in-stream flow, but I can certainly look that up, and I'll have that answer for you on the second reading.
Thank you.
It is important.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And in any regard, if they did move forward on this and it wasn't in-stream flow, it would have to go be under the in-stream flow provisions of the statutes. And I can't tell you whether the in-stream, current in-stream flow of the statutes provide property rights. I don't think so. I think the Game and Fish can only have those. So, you know, from that regard. But that's from memory. But it's all going to be, you know, basically it has to go under any of the current statutes. We don't change the current statutes for in-stream flow in this legislation.
Further discussion? Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. On page 3, this is just a very mechanical question. On page 3, lines 8 through 10, where they can only pay up to no more than 50% of the eligible monthly project expenses, do they ever get to pay it off? I mean, if you keep dividing it, the max you can pay is 50%. So it just keeps dwindling down to you, just pennies. But should it be some dollar value eventually put in there?
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, the operative word there is may. The commission may make monthly payments. To my knowledge, they've never done this. They've never, because these are small projects. You get them done. I mean, you got a handful of receipts, it's done. It's usually not something that goes on like a large, that's language that come over from the large project program that was inserted here. But the operative word is the commission may make, so the idea that they're every month going to issue a check for $49.62 is just not going to happen. So I don't know that it's ever been used. It's in the statutes for the large project. They brought it in here, but because it's a may, I don't see it happening.
President Bebout?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Further discussion on that. So what would the project expenses be? You know, we go ahead and capitalize the money for the project. We appropriate the money, and it's spent. The large project is built, or the small ones are built. What would the monthly expenses be? And I don't remember in any of our water development bills brought forward by the Select Water Committee that we have a category that says monthly expenses. Help me out on that, if you would, please.
Senator Hicks?
So typically, and I guess brings in the large program, so some of these are multi-million. So, I mean, they could literally be 20 or 30 or 40 million-dollar projects, and because they take a number of years or a long time to actually complete them, it's not uncommon to have a contractor. You all these are bid. They go through a public bid process. So if it's going to take you 18 months to, say, lay a large water line or 2 years for a large municipality in the northeast part of the state, the contractors have to have cash flow. So the concept is, and an engineer has to certify the payment that the work's been completed, but the contractor can then go to the sponsoring entity and ask them for a partial payment of that bid price for work they've completed. And that's where this language comes in, is to facilitate the ability under the big program for, if you've got a multi-million dollar contract and it takes 18 months to complete it, to wait till you get to the end of that to get paid, you still have a cash flow problem. So you, as a entity that has done the bid work, can go to the sponsor of that, and you can ask for a partial payment. The engineer then certifies that component of the work was done. They submit those receipts to the Water Development Commission. Then they can make a partial payment on that. And again, on some of the big programs where you're dealing with multi-million dollars, it's pretty important to these contractors that they maintain that cash flow to be able to pay their materials men and their labor. So that's the reason that's in there. It's routinely done with the really large projects.
President Bebout?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. That explains it. And I guess what you really should say in there, it deals with the contract, and where I get bogged down is what expenses are. But if that's the way it's interpreted, then clearly it talks about the contract, which is a set amount, and they're making monthly project expenses towards the contract. And if that's a reading of it, then that certainly makes sense.
Further discussion of the bill, on the bill? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 91, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Senate File 91 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I beg that we rise, leave, and sit again.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Standing committee reports.
January 30, 2017, Mr. President, Committee Number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 142, Community Mental Health Payment Reform 2, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Message from the House.
From the House of Representatives, January 30, 2017, message number 187. Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading by the votes indicated. House Bill number 58, School Facilities Appropriations, ayes 53, noes 7. Message number 188, House Bill number 86, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, ayes 57, noes 2, conflict 1. Message number 193, House Bill number 160, Professional Licensing Boards, Telemedicine, Telehealth, ayes 55, noes 5. That is House Bill number 164, Professional Licensing Boards, Telemedicine, Telehealth. Message number 197, Mr. President, the following bill has failed to pass the House third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 159, Homeless Minors, ayes 30, noes 30, conflict none. Message number 189. Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the votes indicated. House Bill number 113, Medicaid Waiver Program, Military Personnel, ayes 60. Message number 190, House Bill number 121, Fishing Licenses, ayes 57, noes 3. Message number 191, House Bill number 130, Harvest of Trophy Game and Fur-Bearing Animals, ayes 60. House Bill number 156, Involuntary Commitment Emergency Detention Amendments, ayes 60. House Bill number 189, Higher Education Non-Resident Tuition, ayes 44, noes 16. House Bill number 56, Mobile Homes Title Status Upon Permanent Foundation, ayes 58, noes 2. House Bill number 76, American Indian Education Program, ayes 49, noes 11. House Bill number 186, Improvement in Service Districts Services, ayes 60. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Members of the Senate, just for your information, under our Senate Rule 12-10, which deals with reconsideration, if you are considering reconsideration, please come up and let the chief clerk know that you have a specific Senate file, or if we get to a House bill that you want to reconsider, so she will hold that bill rather than getting out of here as soon as it passes. And we will do that. We've done that in the past. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. President, I do have a motion. Mr. President, I move we stand recessed until 2 p.m.
Announcement, Senator Coe.
President, your committee number four, education, preliminary notice here to tell everybody we're going to meet tomorrow morning, which we normally don't meet on Tuesday. We're going to meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, Zona Room L51, to take up Senate File 165, School Finance Education Funding Reductions, and continue our work on Senate Joint Resolution 8, School Construction and Renovation Constitutional Amendment.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. in Jonah Room L54, the bigger room. We're going to take up the following bills, Senate File 71, Electricity Production Standard, that's by Senator Hicks, Senate File 94, Franchise Business Relationships, that's Senator Driscoll, Senate File 102, Board of County Commissioners Designees Zoning Certificates, that's Senator Moniz.
Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet about 12:20 in Jonah Room S18 to reconsider Senate File 127. We'll continue that conversation on exterior residential storm damage repair contracts. Senate File 117, Nationwide Multi-State Licensing System Collection Agencies.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet Monday, January 30th, 10 minutes after adjournment.
That's today.
That's today at Jonah Room S27 to consider the following files, Senate File 140, I-80 Master Plan, and Senate File 57, Motor Vehicle Franchises Exceptions.
Senator Emmert.
Exemptions.
Exception?
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife, will meet tomorrow morning in Jonah Room S27 at 8 a.m. to consider Senate File 139, Game and Fish Licenses, and Senate File 169, Migratory Game Bird Refuge, and any other bills that may be assigned to us in the interim.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Joint Appropriations, will meet at about 5 after 12 down at the Joint Appropriations Room, where we will continue work on the budget. In addition, we will meet upon your Senate committee will meet upon adjournment to finish work on Senate File 166, state-funded capital construction. And, Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, I would respectfully ask that you re-refer Senate File 155, Bar and Grill Liquor License Increase, sponsored by me, from Committee Number 7, Corporations, to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, so ordered. Senate File 155 will be re-referred from Committee Number 7, Corporations, Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senators Anselmi, Dalton, Nethercott, and Ellis, if you would please meet me in my office as soon as we recess. You've heard the motion to recess until 2 p.m. today. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are recessed. We stand in recess until 2 p.m.